Good morning. Welcome to the Wednesday, April 24th meeting of Portland City Council. Council, come to order. And would you please call the roll, Carla?
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales?
Here. We have a number of communication items. Would you call 357 first, please?
Request of Dwayne Edwards to address council regarding the city dedicating general fund resources for economic development.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Just need to put your name into the record, and you have 3 minutes, and appreciate you coming in.
Name is Dwayne Edwards, founder of the Pencil Footwear Design Academy in Portland, Oregon. I want to thank you guys this morning for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the Portland Development Commission. I wanted to express just my thanks to the PDC for actually supporting my business. Like I said, my academy is the first and only footwear design academy in the United States that's specifically dedicated to footwear design. In the 3 years that I've been in business, I have alliances with over 100 different design schools around the world. I've placed over 55 students that are now working professionally in this industry, 25 here in the city of Portland. I have created an alliance with the city of Montebelluna in Italy. We're going to create a collaboration between Montebelluna and the city of Portland on a design exchange program, as well as I am one of the few minorities in my industry. Actually, when I started in 1989, I was a second, and I've left Jordan Brand as a design director for that brand for 22 years to actually start the first academy in the city. As I went on this quest, I chose Portland over Beaverton because I live in Beaverton. Because I worked at Nike. I chose Portland specifically because of the PDC and their commitment to entrepreneurs, and especially minority entrepreneurs like myself. There's very few and far between of us in the city, so it was great for me to be a part of the city as well as to mingle with some of the other great entrepreneurs in the city. What I love about being a part of Portland and specifically associated with the PDC, they've been extremely helpful for me in the development of my business. Whether it's build-outs, in addition to relationship building, not only in the city, but also outside the city as well. I just wanted to express to you guys the importance of having opportunities and programs like the PDC's development for people like myself, not just entrepreneurs, but also people of color, because as you know, we have not that many people of color in the city of Portland. And to be welcomed by such a great organization has not only helped me propel my business, but expand it globally. So I just wanted to testify to let you guys know that that I know there's budget cutbacks and things that the city deems more important, but you'd be amazed at what you can do with a little bit of an investment and a little bit of determination. And I'm just sitting here in front of you as a representative of that determination.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mayor,
thank
you very much. Comment with our honored guest, Mr. Edwards. We're still on the hunt for trying to lure Nike to Portland at some point in the future. And based on what you've just said about your experience in Beaverton and Portland, Mayor, maybe we can add him to the team as a testimonial as we try to lure some of those good jobs here. But thanks for choosing Portland.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Appreciate you coming in.
All right.
Good luck and keep growing. Thanks. Next item, please, Carla.
358, request of Katie Braun to address council regarding a 911 call, independent police review, East and Main police precincts.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Katie Braun, and I'm a little bit nervous because I've never been to a city hall meeting. I appreciate the time to be able to address y'all. On December 12th of last year, I called the police with a 911 call, and Sergeant Dave Galladay came to my house after my ex-boyfriend broke into my house via my dog door. I was extremely emotional, as any woman would be after a boyfriend surprised her in her house via the dog door, and I got no police help. I had tried to detain him at my house after he beat me so the police would come and help me. I'm a community block watch crime prevention captain for my block. I've had police officers give presentations in my house before about crime prevention. The day of 911 was the worst day of my life. Sergeant Dave Galladay did not help me. I have two newspaper articles about this sergeant, and then one piece of paper that tells you a little bit about myself. I want to change Portland for the better. I didn't know anything about Portland domestic violence. I found out the hard way, and now I'm trying to make a change. I live just 3 blocks away from the Portland Domestic Center at Gateway. 3 blocks. The sergeant did not even tell me that. It was a Sunday morning. So I walked over to East Precinct. I'm a realtor in this city, and I thought, if the sergeant can't help me, surely somebody at the East Precinct Department will, and I need to take a walk because I'm all emotional. This was December. It's 4 months later, and I'm still shaken up about this. East Precinct was closed. I cared enough to get in my car and go to Main Precinct on a Sunday morning and see who else I could talk to besides Sergeant Dave Galladay that would hear that this man should have been arrested after coming in my dog door. The police report says he came in my dog door. The next day was Monday. I filed a police grievance. And I also got a restraining order. And now, 4 months later, I'm still getting counseling at the Domestic Gateway Women's Shelter, which, thank God, has been the blessing in this city. I've had so much wonderful counseling from them. But I got to tell you, our police department has a huge problem. I just have 30 seconds left, so I want to tell you, Valentine's Day, 300 women and men marched on Valentine's Day in this city against violence. Our police chief in this city has let inappropriate touching of an officer to other officers. Now, I'm just a citizen, and I don't trust the few bad apples, and this Willamette Weekly article points out that this specific sergeant got fired in Illinois, got hired in Portland, and then got demoted in Portland, and then remoted. So I want to just raise your consciousness that the women and community need to change the police department for the better. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for coming. Please.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for coming. I hope you will connect with Chad Stover in the back, who's one of my staff. I'd like to stay in touch. Thank you. Okay, next item, please.
359, request of Kelly Caldwell to address council regarding behavior of East Precinct police officers.
Good morning.
Good morning, I'm Kelly Caldwell. Thanks for your time today. I'm responding or talking to you about my own experience with East Precinct officers in regard to sport. I went to the courthouse with Ms. Braun and called the East Precinct, spoke with a female officer to see if a case number had been identified or understanding what information would be available. And I understand that my friend had been visited there already and whatnot, but when they put me on hold, she came back and she said, tell your friend not to call the East Precinct anymore. Everything's being handled. And I said, excuse me, did you just tell us not to call the East Precinct? And she said, yes. And I said, can I have your name? And she hung up on me. I had already given her my first name and phone number, and I went over to the Independent Police Review to get the forms because I knew that my friend had some concerns. And while I was there, I received a call identified from the IS precinct, and I was explaining my concerns and that it seemed like maybe there's some domestic violence protocol that perhaps hadn't been followed. And again, when I asked the officer's name, he hung up on me. A few minutes later, called me back and was saying, is this Kelly? Is this Katie? Accused me of, or her, of, I think they didn't maybe understand that there was two people involved. But again, he said, what's your last name, Kelly? And I said, you know, I'd like you to tell me your last name. You called me. Will you identify yourself? And again, I was hung up on. And It doesn't seem like a huge issue, but I think that basic professionalism and accountability, this is sort of where it starts with our police department. We need officers to be able to and willing to identify themselves. And even when someone is upset or distressed, as they often are when faced with criminal activity and being perhaps feeling very intimidated by police officers, they really need to have the accountability and responsibility of identifying themselves and of having professional behavior and being highly discouraged from the leaders to hang up on people and particularly do so after being asked to identify themselves. While I have a minute, I also want to let you know I'm very involved with supporting housing rights activists. I really encourage you to reconsider giving some support for allowing Shower to the People to have parking locations in downtown. They provide mobile showers for folks in need and other alternative housing support outside of the big organizations like Dignity Village, Right to Survive, and whatnot that are really addressing problems at the street level. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
360, request of Lightning to address council regarding ending homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, my name is Lightning. 10-year plan, end homelessness for Portland, Multnomah County. As stated from your plan, national surveys have found homeless people are 3 to 6 times more likely to become sick than housed people. Mental health and addiction issues all elevated to a higher level because of homelessness. Police, fire, medical, overtime, and other social services overtime going higher, higher, and higher. Which that leads me to believe there is a direct correlation between the approximate 1,500 people currently sleeping on sidewalks, under bridges, and in doorways every night. If higher overtime pay is to begin to be reduced, first, we must end homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County. If the number of people sleeping on the sidewalks increase, then it will be expected overtime pay will do the same. The health, public safety, and sanitation concerns associated with individuals living and sleeping outside negatively affect both the individual and the broader community. Mayor Charlie Hales has been given 2 years remaining on the 10-year plan, whereas the previous mayors both had 4 years each to end homelessness. If the same path is followed, the likelihood of ending homelessness will not happen. Now, if a potential donor stated they have an open checkbook, just give them the numbers it takes to end homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County. Again, the 10-year plan provides no numbers pertaining to ending homelessness. Here's a possible example. 1,500 people currently sleeping on sidewalks. Rent, $800 per month times 12, approximately $10,000 per year. 1,500 people, housing provided for 1 year, $15 million. It costs $30,000 per individual to house someone in prison. 1,500 people, 1 year, $45 million. Now, if we don't provide housing, 1,500 people still sleeping on sidewalks, under bridges, in front of businesses. This is what happens. Skyrocketing overtime cost. Businesses throughout the city will lose revenue. Overall property values will decline. Property tax revenue will drop. Tourism will drop. City will not run efficiently. All services throughout the city will become overwhelmed. Estimated over yearly expense to the city, $75 million to $150 million per year. If a $15 million investment to end homelessness in Portland has the potential to cut overall losses of approximately $50 to $150 million, is that not the logical solution? Please just show me your numbers to end homelessness relating to your 10-year plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 361, request of Ed Smith to address council regarding Portland Development Commission.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Ed Smith, Premier Gear Machine Operations Manager. Just want to say thank you, number one, for the PDC. Premier Gear and Machine Works, we do custom machine design and manufacturing. We have full machine shop facilities at the corner of 17th Northwest Thurman Street. We're a third-generation company since 1923. We employ 25 people, and we supply customers all over the world with our products and services. Our customers range from OEMs to wind farms, pulp and paper factories. We help customers keep their facilities running, keep our dams, our wind turbines functioning. In addition, we run 24/7 repair facility, and we handle extremely large jobs. Within this last year, 2 years, we put in a very large boring mill to help increase our capacity, spending $1 million. Well, on that, we are now paying property taxes on this machine to Multnomah County. As a business in Portland and in Multnomah County, we pay income taxes, county taxes, and business licensing fees. We own the building that we occupy, and we pay real property taxes as well as personal property taxes on the contents of our equipment, computers, and furniture. We pay state employment tax, we contribute to the workers' benefit fund, and we pay TriMet tax as well. Our employees all live within the greater Portland area, and they all have homes, raise our children. Therefore, we also contribute in the way of income taxes and property taxes while supporting local businesses. The PDC has helped our business grow by partnering with us at trade shows and reducing our cost of our participation while introducing us to other companies in the Portland area who have now come our customers and encased vendors. It's very important that our company and the manufacturing industry here in the Portland continue to partner with the PDC to grow and remain active in economic development. The City of Portland, Multnomah County, seem to be doing all they can to give businesses, particularly manufacturing businesses, reason to leave the area. There are several factors that we have to fight against in order to continue to have our businesses and other businesses stay and grow in the Portland area. Things that need to be addressed are the bad traffic, in part to inadequate freeways and bridges, national ratings on our public schools that continue to decline while class sizes increase. We have high taxes in Multnomah County, in particular, that continue to rise with new ones being created, such as the art tax. In the existence of the unions, we are not a right-to-work state. I know the city is faced with budget deficits, but things could get worse if the PDC is no longer available to support and partner and assist in the growth of the Portland-based businesses. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for taking your time to come here. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, let's take up the consent calendar. I don't believe there are any requests to remove items.
Actually, was there one? I'm sorry. Don't have it tapped. Sorry. Yes, I do. I'm sorry for the delay.
Okay.
It's 371.
371.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll remove 371 from the consent calendar. Any other requests? And let's take a roll call on the remainder of the consent calendar, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Time certain, 362.
Adopt the Barber Concept Plan.
I'll say a few things in introducing this item, and then Susan and her team can come up. This is a public hearing on a council resolution to adopt the Barber Concept Plan. This is a subset of a larger ongoing metro planning process called the Southwest Corridor Plan. That is a multifaceted effort to look at transportation and land use in the Southwest region to support high-capacity transit. The plan will try to integrate affordable housing, parks, green infrastructure, economic development, even public health into our land use and transportation strategies for this part of the city or this part of the region. This concept plan, so the concept plan in front of us today is therefore nested in this larger regional planning effort to develop the land use vision that's specific for Portland and our part of this corridor, and that will be used to guide future decisions for the larger Metro Southwest Corridor plan. The plan before us doesn't make recommendations with regards to any particular type of high-capacity transit, nor the details or choices about the alignment. Those decisions will be made later in the Southwest Corridor planning effort. This concept plan likewise will not directly result in city policy or map changes, but provides guidance and recommendations for those future legislative actions to coincide with outcomes from the corridor plan. We'll have a brief overview of the project from staff. We'll hear from members of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. We'll hear from community members. And then finally, council will deliberate and take action on the resolution that concludes this. Therefore, we conclude the Barber concept planning process within the Southwest Corridor plan. So this is our piece of a larger picture. It's the policy piece that will lead to the land use and map changes later. So, Susan, if you and your team could come up and walk us through this, and then I know we've got Howard here and also Andre on behalf of the commission.
Morning, Mayor, Council. Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me here today is Jay Sugnet and Morgan Tracy and also Joe Zender. Back in the audience there. As the mayor indicated, we're here today to present recommendations about Barber Boulevard. As you may remember, about 4 years ago, the region chose Southwest Corridor as the next priority for high-capacity transit. In response, multiple cities and jurisdictions have been working together on the Southwest Corridor and creating a vision for it. In Portland specifically, we've leveraged this opportunity to look beyond high-capacity transit, and really we're looking at how we can make Barber be more of a significant destination and not just a place that we drive through in order to get downtown. As Morgan will discuss during the presentation, we've estimated that in the next 25 years, that about 16,000 new jobs will be supported in the Barber Corridor, and there will be a need for about 20,000 more units of housing. With that in mind, the goal of the concept plan to make Barber is to make Barber a thriving area, to focus on employment, to focus on housing, to focus on green space, and to go beyond just looking at the transit corridor. To develop the concept plan, we had a community working group. It included businesses, neighborhood representatives, homeowners, renters, transit, bicycle, pedestrian advocates, and others. The group worked very closely with staff for more than a year to develop scenarios. We had lots of walking tours out there. We had working group meetings, forums. The community was very engaged, and they totally helped shape the scenarios and ultimately the concept plan. So Morgan will walk through sort of a brief overview of the concept plan. I think it's important, again, as you're listening, that y'all keep in mind that, of course, high-capacity transit is, it can be a game changer in that it's more than just the transit itself. We've learned that it is sort of a key ingredient for a significant transformation for any area, and especially in this case, I think that it's an opportunity to be in a place where there's going to be a lot of new jobs in the future, and a lot of times we focus transit development around housing, and in this case, I think one of the points of this is that this is going to be a job center. Morgan.
Good morning, Mayor, members of Council.
Is this on? I just pushed the little button right there. There
you go. Great. Thank you. We're very excited to be bringing you the concept plan here. It's been a lengthy process, but a really exciting one. I just want to give you an overview or preview of the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommendation. We'll come back to the slide at the end, but basically we're seeking adoption of the Barber Concept Plan, some further direction to continue participating in this larger Southwest Corridor plan. And you'll hear from Andre from Planning and Sustainability Commission about continuing our discussions about citywide investment priorities and the need to address critical safety improvements on and near Barber. Well, that's interesting. The map is missing. So
the line's in there, though.
So this is the Barber Concept Plan, as you mentioned, fits into and supports the Southwest Corridor Plan. So the Southwest Corridor is basically a continuation of our high-capacity transit story. The lines, which are missing the map, indicate the lines that we've constructed so far. The blue line, which runs from Gresham to downtown and then out to Hillsborough, the red line to the airport, the yellow line to the Expo Center. West is that sort of purple line running between Beaverton and Wilsonville. We just finished the green line. Portland-Milwaukee is under construction. And now the region is studying the Southwest Corridor, which would look at the area between downtown and Sherwood. And as you mentioned, this was ranked the highest in the 2010 Regional Transportation Plan for advancement. So at its heart, the Southwest Corridor Plan is about high-capacity transit, but it's also much more than that, differing from previous transit projects. It's a mobility corridor, so we're looking at all modes of travel, including roadway, bike, pedestrian, and freight improvements. And it's a different approach this time. We're leading with land use. We're identifying the places to connect, what those places need to thrive, and then determining how to best connect them, rather than drawing a line on a map and figuring out how to orient the land uses to the transit alignment. So this is where the land use visioning ideas in the Barber Concept Plan fit in. So while the Southwest Corridor Plan area is quite large, as indicated on that map, the Barber Concept Plan is a much narrower focus, looking at land uses on and adjacent to Barber. So zooming in on Barber, this map shows Barber in relation to the 2040 regional growth concept. You can see the Hillsdale and West Portland town centers, also known as the crossroads. Barber is designated as a regional corridor, which is a major street that serves as a key transportation route for people and goods. In the report, we talk about Barber in its four distinct segments. So on the far north end is the Lair Hill segment, which feels like an inner neighborhood extension of downtown with a classic street grid, has a good sidewalk network. OHSU and the National College of Natural Medicine are located here. South of Hamilton, you enter the wooded gateway between Central City and the areas further south. Then we come to the historic highway around Fred Meyer and Barber World Foods, which is comprised of strip commercial and auto-oriented uses and some office uses. And in the far southwest is where PCC Sylvania campus is located. So we're not starting from scratch. The Barber Concept Plan is building on a number of past planning efforts. We had the Barber Streetscape Plan, which was completed in the late 90s. The Southwest Community Plan, which identified Barber to be studied later in a more Barber-centric focus. The High Crash Corridor identified a number of interim safety improvements. And most recently, we have the Portland Plan, which describes Portland as a healthy, connected city and introduces the concept of Barber as a civic corridor. As Susan mentioned, there was extensive public outreach throughout the planning process. We had meetings and events held in various locations along the corridor to reach a wide audience. So one of the reasons there is interest in this corridor is Barber has a lot of potential. There are more jobs than residents. There's about a 20% higher median household income. Over half the eligible residents hold a bachelor's degree or higher. There are a number of major institutions, PCC Sylvania, National College of Natural Medicine, OHSU, the city's largest employer, PSU, Oregon's largest university. There's significant capacity in the large stretches of general commercial zones on Barber. There's great access to downtown and it's close to I-5. And lease and rental rates are about $2 less per square foot when compared to the citywide average. But it also faces some constraints. Steep slopes, soils, and addressing stormwater all affect development. There's 6 linear miles of missing sidewalks and critical gaps in the bike lanes. The auto-oriented development pattern leaves few places like Multnomah Village where you're apt to stop in, shop a while, and take a stroll. The road was built as a highway, but after I-5 went in, it retained its throughput design for moving vehicles, prioritizing vehicular movement. And while the lower lease and rental rates offer affordable options, the current rates of return on investments make it more difficult for new projects to pencil out. So the community working group sat down and collaboratively developed a vision, which is included in the report along with supporting goals. But basically, these boil down to making Barber a more enjoyable place that better serves the needs of all people who live, work, shop, or go to school in this corridor. So using the information gleaned from our background research reports, we began developing the preferred concept using several tools. We came up with urban design prototypes, which are alternative ways of relating development to Barber. We surveyed the community about relative tolerable development intensities through visual mock-ups and mapping exercises. And we interviewed developers and conducted economic analysis to ground truth these concepts. And I'll cover those in a little bit. So based on observations from walks with the community members, we found some areas lent themselves to alternate Main Street arrangements. And I think when Barbara was first zoned, the concept was to have a sort of linear Main Street orientation of retail on Barbara, facing Barbara. But as we walked around there, we realized there's a lot of noise, a lot of traffic. Not all areas lent themselves to that sort of approach. So the four prototypes that were developed look at different ways to orient development around Barbara. First is a focus on Barbara. Then a parallel Main Street, looking at some side streets, a separated frontage road, or focused on a perpendicular Main Street. Next, we polled the community to gauge the relative level of preferred development intensity, ranging from modest improvements to high density. An overwhelming majority of both the forum and online polls preferred scenario three, which is the medium mixed use. This is what we later termed the Goldilocks solution. We then asked participants to assign relative levels of development intensity to distinct focus areas along the corridor, along with the needed infrastructure to support those and other amenity improvements like parks, trails, and roads. From this input, we then had the consultant team examine the market feasibility for the various focus areas to see what the market could bear now and what the market could bear in the future with this additional investment.
So, could you back up a slide?
Yes.
No one preferred option five?
Nobody preferred option five. I think because there wasn't a picture to go along with it.
Because there was not a...
a picture to go along with it.
Oh, isn't that a... Oh, I see. Oh, I'm sorry. There's four options there.
Four options and then none of the
above. Five was none of the above.
Okay. I was off one. Yeah. So 11% preferred option four, the higher density one.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Choosing none of the above.
Okay, thanks.
That's still surprising.
Yeah.
Nobody said, leave it alone, don't do anything.
I think that shows a recognition that that folks see a need for change on Barber.
Yeah.
So the resulting preferred concept shows pulse points along Barber. They're primarily located in areas with greater connectivity across I-5, which serves neighborhoods on both sides. So you can sort of take advantage of the greater market there. And they also have existing basic services like grocery stores. For each of these seven focus areas, we developed an urban design concept. I won't cover all seven, but I did want to highlight three that had the greatest potential for change with an investment in high-capacity transit. And those are Kelly, Southwest 13th, and the Crossroads. So at the far north end of the corridor is the Kelly area. And here we would like to take advantage of the planned investments for both OHSU and National College of Natural Medicine. Both these campuses have plans to expand their student enrollment. PSU is also anticipating growth, so to take advantage of that, additional connections over I-405 would help draw investments to the area. So this urban design concept envisions NATO as the spine of the neighborhood, with improved crossings to knit the neighborhood back together. Reconfiguring the Ross Island bridge ramps could free up as much as four city blocks of developable property for a potential park and possible mixed-use development. At Southwest 13th, the focus area is located in the historic highway segment near the Fred Meyer. Here we looked at a perpendicular Main Street prototype, which takes advantage of that quieter side street. And you just step a few feet off of Barber, all of a sudden the noise levels die and the traffic levels are much lower. A new signal at Southwest 13th would allow better access to, from, and across Barber. There's opportunities to daylight portions of Stevens Creek. And added housing options near Fred Meyer offer opportunities for seniors or students. So you already saw one of these pictures. We did a couple mock-ups. This is one of them. This shows the vantage looking down Southwest 13th Avenue before and then after with ground floor retail and housing added above. Finally, the Crossroads, this is also known as the West Portland Town Center, is where I-5, Barber, Capitol Highway, Taylor's Ferry all converge. It's also where the only southbound I-5 on-ramp after downtown is located with a four-mile gap between them. So as a result of that, there's significant congestion around the area, stifling redevelopment potential, and the prospect of additional development creates concerns for nearby residents who struggle with the current traffic levels. Liberating the town center so that it can flourish will require significant transportation investment. We're looking at a new southbound on-ramp located further north to reduce demand at this location, a reconfigured freeway on-ramps to reduce, or off-ramps rather, to reduce impact on neighborhood streets, and a reconfigured intersection design to control speeds, move traffic, and reduce overall congestion. And you can see one of the concepts in that upper left-hand corner there. In this urban design concept, you can see the Barber Transit Center site has been transformed from a 5-acre surface parking lot into a retail and entertainment district with structured parking. Here we took advantage of the frontage road as a separated slip road, as shown here, to create a calm side street with on-street parking and buildings that were brought up to the street. The concept plan contains a number of recommendations intended to carry forward the community's expectations for safety improvements, improve connections from and between neighborhoods, reducing traffic noise and air quality impacts, and addressing current infrastructure deficiencies that will support future transit investments. There are a couple of key findings that also emanate from the report. We're talking about only minor zoning changes. A lesson that we learned during the Southwest Community Plan process was concern about intrusion of high density into single-family established neighborhoods. Concepts in this plan can be accomplished within existing zoning entitlements, with the exception of two potential areas. The 4 acres of reconfigured right-of-way at the Ross Island Bridgehead could be zoned more intensely. And following additional town center area-specific planning, the West Portland Town Center will need to be rezoned to realize the anticipated growth, but this will be contingent on the transportation and other infrastructure investments described earlier. But most notably, and as Susan highlighted, for Barber to really change, high capacity transit is the catalyst. With a reconstructed roadway and investment in multimodal enhancements, the market analysis shows that this creates the atmosphere where property owners and lenders can see a greater return on their investments. There are other tools and recommendations that can help kickstart this investment, but absent a reliable, high-quality transit system, these tools cannot sustain the type of change that is needed to transform Barber. So next steps. So this would complete our phase of the Barber concept plan, so the focus would now shift primarily to the Southwest Corridor plan. Over the next few months, regional partners will develop a shared investment strategy to have a narrowed selection of transit alignments, roadway, and active transportation projects. These will then be further refined into preparation for entering the federal permitting process to begin sometime around summer of 2014. Assuming the NEPA process is completed on time, that's a big assumption, regional partners would then need to select a preferred alternative sometime around 2017. And then, assuming the decisions and funding all come together, construction could possibly begin at the earliest in 2020. And so we're back to our first slide. So the PSC is recommending that council adopt the concept plan by non-binding resolution, and basically a statement of intent to help guide future decisions in the Southwest Corridor plan. The city continue to be involved in the Southwest Corridor planning process, that there be a discussion about our citywide investment priorities as we consider updates to the citywide systems plan, and that the city continue to fund and advocate for safety improvements along Barber Boulevard. I thank you, and staff is available for questions now or following testimony.
Thanks. Questions for staff?
What is the definition of high capacity transit, or what are the definitions? Or what are the options?
The options initially at the very start of the process were looking at things like light rail, bus rapid transit. We were talking about rapid streetcar, which is a version of the streetcar with station space further apart and traveling faster. But basically, it's a way of moving a lot of people with a reliable time schedule.
It doesn't mean light rail. I guess that's the point. It could mean light rail, but it could mean some other options.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
Yeah, as I think the federal process requires that we look at more than one mode, mm-hmm. and doing nothing. Right. So certainly bus and multiple rail technologies and the base case are all on the table when we go into that alternatives analysis process.
Or a mix and match.
Yeah.
And then my last question was, if you know, further south on Barber, where Barber hits Southwest 65th, it's kind of right there. It's kind of the tigered Portland border.
Mm-hmm.
is that area being looked at as part of the Tigard's?
So Tigard conducted a similar process. I should have mentioned that Tigard, Tualatin, and Sherwood are all doing land use plans similar to support the Southwest Corridor Plan. So Tigard's land use vision was a little more broad. They looked citywide. They weren't restricted to the particular corridor. But they do have aspirations for in energizing the Tigard Triangle area, the area south of 99.
Is that what that's called, the Tigard
Triangle?
Tigard Triangle, okay.
217 I-5 Barber.
That area, okay. I guess I did have one last question. You made reference to a possible new southbound I-5 on-ramp somewhere north of the current on-ramp. Is there any ideas where that might be?
So the project has a concept that's being looked at by ODOT for feasibility and costing purposes, located somewhere around the vicinity of Southwest 26th.
So, thank you.
Here, I have a question, if I could. Susan, this concept plan is deliberately focused on the primarily on the transportation challenges and options. But the narrative talks about our policies around gentrification and displacement, the values of mixed use, housing, the need for green spaces, and then at page 50, it has an inventory of some of the tools we use to do community development. And I have two questions. The first is, at what point in the process do we actually do we set specific goals and targets about what we want to achieve in those areas, non-transportation? So, for example, it's a high-level discussion about aspirations, and it talks about some values and some opportunities, but it doesn't actually charge us with some outcome, nor does it set parameters for how we might get there. So is that something that follows, or what's the relationship between that part of the planning and, I guess, in the concept plan?
I guess, well, part of it is that just like a lot of things that are in these plans or in the comprehensive plan, there will be implementing ordinances that come afterwards, where if there is a need for a change in zoning, if there is a need for to provide guidance, that we would bring some of those kinds of decisions to council.
So let me, I don't think I stated my question very artfully. So, for example, we're talking about creating some transit hubs and doing some mixed-use development. So at what point does the council weigh in and say, for example, we would like to see 20% of the housing affordable, or we'd like to see green spaces within a five-minute walk of those corridors, and then compare that against what's the existing inventory, what's the projected need, and then look at how we might fund it. When do we come in with that level of refinement?
So there are a number of decisions that are being made as part of the Southwest Corridor in terms of how they're evaluating these different corridors and how they perform. Connections to green spaces, the housing targets that match with the metro forecasts, are all sort of setting the stage for those decisions. But I guess this is sort of, you got to keep in mind that we're the first step in several steps down this long road. When we get further along and start making decisions about particular station areas, then there'll be a need to further refine the station area plans for those areas. So I think it's reasonable to assume that we would be vetting those plans with the council to make sure that the city's objectives for those particular station areas are being met.
Okay, that's helpful, and I'm reminded. The other day I reread the Albina plan, and it had incredibly specific goals for housing that there was no chance then or in the future we were going to meet. But we set them in black and white, and we said we're going to do all these wonderful things, and we haven't come close because we never had the resources. This concept plan at the end lists all the tools that we have, which include creating an urban renewal district, allocating CDBG, 108 loan, all those things. And I think that's great to know what those tools are, but unless as part of the vision we're clear about what we want the outcome to look like, I don't see the connection. And actually, I've been wondering lately whether we've missed an opportunity with Portland-Milwaukee light rail to upstream declare our intentions about the mixture of housing types, for example, at the stations. There's a lot of speculation that's already occurred. And I wonder whether at some point we need to be very concrete about what kind of mixture we're looking for. And if it's mixed-use development with affordable, with senior, whatever, whether we have to be as specific as possible to give us a chance to meet those outcomes. And it may be too early in the process, but this is a strategic vision, and I'm wary of being too specific, but I'm also wary of being too general in terms of the kind of outcomes we're looking for.
I think one of the main points is that we have, in the past few years, stepped back a little bit from doing district plans, neighborhood plans, as we've been doing this big vision. And we have an opportunity now to come back to you and say, do you want to do those again? And because I think there is, we do have a lot of citywide goals related to affordable housing, related to, you know, all of the other areas, but we haven't stepped back and sort of said around station areas, around Barber, around Powell, do we want to do specific district plans there that actually put objectives and put numbers around, you know, the kinds of things that we want to achieve?
So maybe this is just really my way of signaling to the mayor that I think this is a missing piece in our approach to transportation planning. And interestingly, as you noted the other day when Secretary Pratt was visiting us, all of a sudden at the federal level, we're integrating housing and transportation into the dialogue. And yet it feels like we're still somewhat siloed in terms of how we do the planning in both. And I wonder at some point, do we need to have some concrete aspirational goals? We did that with a 30% set aside for housing and urban renewal districts. That sort of sharpened our focus. Do we need to start talking about specifically looking at every one of these opportunities as a chance to leverage some senior housing, some affordable housing, or whatever, what the mixture is, and actually linking both the zoning changes and the investment strategies around getting to those outcomes? And I'm afraid I don't want to see the proverbial train leave the station and us not having had that conversation, because part of the reason for all those investments in transportation is to make the transportation choices accessible to all. And I think we may be missing a historic opportunity to be being very prescriptive about the kind of mix of housing we're looking for.
No, I think that's a very good point. And I'm glad you made it, not only in and of itself, but before our Planning and Sustainability Commission members come up and speak, because I'd like them to comment on this. I think you're onto something there. The federal government has said we want to integrate environmental planning, housing, and transportation when we do alternatives analysis, the very federal process that we're queuing ourselves up for here. So I understand the balance you're trying to strike there, too. We don't want to be too directive in a concept plan, but we don't want to miss a mandate that we at some point might want to include in the package.
Well, and coming off of what we all learned through that, I think, really dynamic debate a few weeks ago on development and parking generally, we might, for example, encourage planning to take a specific look at bonuses that are unique to these transit corridors or transit hubs that create market-based incentives for people to put the affordable housing that we are actually not seeing now in the market development that's occurring on Division and elsewhere. We're getting all these big buildings but no affordable housing. And we do have actually now some tools to incentivize affordable housing through the redevelopment process and the changing of zoning and other things. And I'm concerned that we state some important policy goals in this document, but we don't have any council direction on outcomes we're looking for and mixture. And I think this is the time for us to weigh in on that.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And then, as you mentioned about the Albina plan, at the later stages in the process, we have to make sure that there are actually real implementation strategies to get what we say aspirationally that we want. Now we say we want affordable housing. Well, do we get it? Well, we have to make some choices and impose some things and use some tools, whether it's tax increment or something else or development agreements, to get the outcome.
And by the way, I would say for me it's both green spaces and housing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. When I was visiting my daughter recently in Los Angeles, I learned from their parks commissioner that their SDC program has a geographic limitation on where you can spend the money, which is different than ours, but it requires the money be spent in a relative proximity to where the development's occurring. there's a suggestion in this plan that we might want to target SDC revenues, keep them local, to do build out of some infrastructure. Well, if we determine there's a deficit of some green spaces and in addition want to incentivize affordable housing, this may be the time to put that into directive so that everything is linked towards getting those goals and not just keep it at a high-level aspiration.
Related question, and that is where you and your staff are updating the comp plan, working with the community, working with the commission. How does this concept plan get folded into that? And might, in other words, two questions. How does this get folded in? Does this get folded into the comp plan and how? And is that the gate for the kind of policy, the next step in clarity of policy that Commissioner Fish is talking about? In other words, one choice for taking up this suggestion is amend this document. I'm certainly open to that. But another choice is at the next level of specificity, include those elements. What do you think?
In the development of the comprehensive plan, there are these policy expert groups, and a lot of this data and information from this has kind of fed into there because there are many of the same similar ideas and concepts. And so when you see and what's out now in terms of the 30% draft that you all have in terms of the comprehensive plan, you'll see many of the same kinds of concepts in there. And so I would encourage you, and we've been meeting with housing so we could continue to do that, and with parks and others, to make sure that some of the ideas around the specifics, if you really wanted a specific around SDCs, to be something that's at least brought up as an idea to pursue as part of the comprehensive plan, that may be a place to put it.
Other questions for staff, comments at this point? Thanks very much. And I know we have some Planning and Sustainability Commission members here. I'd like to call them up next. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Good
morning.
Howard Shapiro, Vice Chair of the Port Planning Sustainability Commission. Let me say before I start that I found the conversation you all were having very energizing and exciting. You're beginning to look at plans like Barber and everything through the lens of the Portland plan and beginning to give us a chance to implement with us the thought of it going forward. It's very, very exciting to feel this partnership because we spend an inordinate amount of our time trying to focus on things like equity as we forward these things to you. And they really do comport, thanks to Mr. Fish, with other ideas like affordable housing, green space, and so forth. So good conversation. As a commissioner and citizen, I thank you for that. God, I'm getting all choked up.
That happens when you talk about the Portland plan.
I guess so, man. I'm emotional about that
Chris
plan.
Smith has the same problem.
On February 26th, the Planning Sustainability Commission voted unanimously to forward the draft Barber concept plan to the City Council for adoption and for resolution. That plan, by the way, identified something that I think you all should know, and it has to do with the study, and that is that Portland begins and ends at Buster's Barbecue. That's a relevant fact you all should be aware of. I thought that was fascinating. In support of that, I've been asked to read a letter by Chris Smith, my fellow commissioner, who judiciously attended 15 months of hearings and reports with a great deal of sincerity that there was good citizen input at every level on this plan. So I'm reading his letter to you. Dear Mayor Hales and City Council members, unfortunately, a prior commitment will prevent me from testifying in person during your consideration of the Barber concept plan. It was my great pleasure to serve for 15 months as the Planning and Sustainability Commission liaison to the dedicated citizens on the community working group. The plan process has produced a strong vision for this corridor, creating opportunities and making quality places to enhance the vitality of Southwest Portland. I fully support the Commission recommendation and would like to call your attention to some specific issues in the plan that will benefit from ongoing Council attention. One, the plan identifies that fully realize the West Portland Crossroads Town Center and other opportunity areas in the plan may require reconfiguration of freeway ramps, and the City should partner with ODOT to examine this issue. I know you brought that up, I believe. And secondly, portions of the corridor may benefit from a road diet. I thought that was an interesting turn of phrase. A road diet, and the city should engage with ODOT at the earliest opportunity and ongoing basis during the planning and realization of the Southwest Corridor Plan to capture these benefits. Thank you for your consideration of these issues, Chris Smith. And now I'd like to introduce the man who normally would be sitting here, Chair Baugh, for additional comments from our commission.
Thank you, Council and Mayor. Andre Baugh, Chair of the Portland Planning Sustainability Commission. My comments are specific around one of the issues you were just discussing. The community and the working group should be committed on the work and results of the Barber concept planning process. This was an involved group for a long period of time that did some great work. The ideas contained in this report are innovative yet reflective of market realities. You heard that the market's going to need to help with the public investment here to make it a reality. There's a strong acknowledgement of the role of the private market we'll need to take in partnering for this success. And as chair of the Planning Sustainability Commission, I fully support and recommend council accept the Barber Concept Plan. However, in the context of the larger Southwest Corridor Plan and its forthcoming decisions on delivering high-capacity transit, there's an important question that remains unanswered. How does the Southwest Corridor fit into Portland citywide strategic measures of success, including equity, resident satisfaction, green space, housing, prosperous households, and complete neighborhoods, and job creation, to name a few? The Portland Plan recognized the importance of equity and other measures in determining service delivery and creating complete communities and enjoying prosperity for all current and future citizens of the city. Before we continue down the path of funding high capacity transit in Southwest, we recommend reviewing the priority rankings of these major transportation investments first. While the Portland Sustainability Commission understands that this is an important plan in terms of influencing the current regional discussions about high capacity transit, we believe any significant public investment would benefit from further council discussion about citywide investment priorities and how an investment in transit fits within the Portland Plan 12 measures. And those measures are what you were talking about, Commissioner Fish, including housing, green spaces, and complete neighborhoods. The comprehensive plan is the tool the Planning Sustainability Commission will use to take a fresh look at our citywide systems plan and infrastructure priorities and making recommendations. We understand that council also has a broader view. So as we look at the Portland plan, you have regional partners and strategic measures with those regional partners and statewide views that we may not take into consideration, but we want to be able to bring out of the comp plan to a set of recommendations that say from the Portland plan, here's the priorities we would make from a transportation standpoint that include the measures of success, measured against those measures of success, and why you would want to make those investments in a strategic way, given that you don't have all the money in the world. So what would be the priority best for Portland in the future? And it would take into account housing and job growth and prosperity.
Good. Great. Thank you. Questions for these two amazing volunteers?
Actually, 2020 was mentioned. I intend to be here to celebrate that.
It's a plan.
Andre, actually, following up on what you just said, when you think about the city as a whole, mm-hmm. what are areas do you think we should think of as sort of competing for our attention and investments with the Barber area?
Well, right now you have Powell Boulevard that's being looked at in East County. We just recently you looked at parking, but one of the issues in the parking was the transit. When you look at transit corridors, East County was blank from a TriMet standpoint of having frequent bus service. So they're not even talking high capacity transit. They're just, you know, bus service. So as we look around the city, there's other areas. So I think through the comp plan, we can take that look and say, you know, from a job standpoint, from a housing standpoint, green space, just connections and complete neighborhoods. which of these investments makes the best sense, I think council then has to look regionally and say, how does that fit into your connections with the rest of the partners and the state goals from that standpoint?
To give you my knee-jerk, uninformed view and see if it comports with your more informed view, I mean, part of my reaction is, since I live, you know, in Multnomah Village near Barber, is that I'd feel guilty having high-capacity transit put in Barber before we have bus rapid transit on Powell and